The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by U.S. Christian Chamber National Conference and Expo. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Afternoons with Mike, right here on The Shepherd. On the line with me, somebody that I'm very excited to talk about, and that is Gus Ramirez. Gus is a supporter of missions work. He is a business owner. And boy, it is great to talk to somebody who has a heart for God like you do, sir. Welcome to the program.
Delighted to be here, and I'm looking forward to the interview.
Well, thank you, Gus. And I know that you have a mutual friend, Bill Snell, over at Missionary Ventures.
Correct. We've been working with Missionary Ventures almost 20 years now in work and other stuff.
A great organization. And then a second contact that I have with you, I just interviewed a young lady by the name of Jill Aragon Neely, who is a medical doctor and getting ready to go into the missions work in Nicaragua. And she was familiar with you as well.
Yeah, she's an outstanding young woman that we're looking forward to see great things in the future from her. Yeah. Parents are terrific, and the apple didn't fall too far from the tree.
Well, that's for sure. She's a very, just an amazing young lady with a story that is just breathtaking in terms of her faith and how God has opened doors for her and just continues to do so. It really is an amazing thing. Gus, tell me a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up, and did you grow up in a Christian home?
I was born in Puerto Rico. My parents are both Puerto Rican. My mom was a biology teacher, and my dad was an Army officer, so we were Army brats. First came to the States around 5, and then traveled to a number of places, and including Europe. Spent 3 years in Verdun, France. Eventually, my dad retired to South Florida, and that's where I went to middle school and high school. I was raised a Catholic. We pretty much attended church regularly. It wasn't until I started dating my wife that we switched to the Lutheran church as primarily the church that we went to. Mm-hmm. So we got married young, and our faith has been sort of the three strands has been Becky and I and our faith that has tied us together and, has helped us weather all the challenges of life and has let us do some special things, I think.
You know, when you talk about three strands, and I think of the scripture about a three-leg, like the whole picture of a three-legged stool and three strands to a cord, all of that really is a great analogy. When you add the will of God and His sovereignty in our lives with a husband and a wife who have a heart for the Lord, it really does make for a wonderful combination, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. You know, we were yoked early on, and we went to church in college. I met her early. She was 18 and I was 19, and we dated for over 3 years and before we got married. But one of the things we did regularly on Sunday was go to church together and seek out really a denomination that we could both sort of live with and be happy with. And she was raised a Baptist. I was raised a Catholic, and the Lutheran church was sort of a middle ground.
Mm-hmm.
Denominations aren't very important to us. What we look for is scriptural teaching at the churches we go to. So we actually go to a Lutheran church in Milwaukee and a Presbyterian church in Naples. So what we look for is what comes out and what's preached. And if it's biblically solid, then we're comfortable in that church environment.
So you spend part of your year in Wisconsin.
Yeah, we as a business owner, we have always traveled a lot all over the world. I've got operations in China, India, and Europe. About 2003, we bought a home in Naples, and but we also spent a couple months in Montana. So we're sort of migrant workers.
My goodness. I know that you're a business owner, and we'll get to that in a moment, but how do you, I'm just trying to imagine how you get used to living in the environment, weather environment in Wisconsin compared to Naples. That's just about as different as can be, isn't it?
Yeah, we obviously escaped the winters in Wisconsin and escaped the heat in Florida. And,
that's Montana. Right.
Is a place we go to both in the winter and summertime. So we have grown to love the mountains and the snow, and we can deal with weather anywhere.
That's great. I've only flown over Montana. I've never really been there, but I understand that it is beautiful.
Yeah, you need to go. There's few states that offer the beauty, the natural beauty of Montana. Yellowstone, obviously, is a fabulous park. And but you have Glacier, and frankly, the ride between Glacier and Lake Louise in Canada is probably the best drive in North America that I've ever been on. It's just beautiful. So we love the nature. We love to hike, and it's a way we sort of appreciate God's artwork in His creation.
There is certainly a lot of artwork on display in nature out there. God and His amazing masterpieces. Just even seeing it from 35,000 feet when I flew over, it was pretty amazing from that angle. I can't imagine what it would be like to be down and seeing some of the plains and the mountains in the distance that you get to see on the ground in Montana.
Well, if we were doing FaceTime and Zoom, I could show you outside a window, Lone Peak in a blue Montana blue sky, which is phenomenal this morning.
And, oh, you're there now.
Or.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, that's great. I wish I could see it. Gus, tell me a little bit about how it was that you came to have a heart as you do for missions.
Well, it's a pretty interesting story. And I'll start with how we got involved in education, because that is very much related. As CEO of a business, private business, I get anywhere from 30 to 50 letters a week asking for money and support of some kind or another from all sorts of organizations.
And, sure.
Oh, roughly mid-90s, early 90s, I got a letter from an organization in Milwaukee called the United Community Center. And it was interestingly written. I look at these letters in a nanosecond. I sit over a trash can and go through them once a week. And I glance at that letter, and there was enough there that I actually read the whole letter and put it aside. And one of my practices as CEO was anytime I leave on an international trip, I clean my desk, which is rarely clean. I always have things on top that I'm working on at one point in time or another. And I had this letter staring me as I was going to Europe, and I called over my head of HR, a lady named Maura Kelly, and I said, Maura, why don't you go down and look at this organization and see what they're about? When I came back, she was giddy with excitement and about this organization, and said, Gus, you just have to go take a look what's down there. I think you're going to really like it. I did that. I started supporting that organization. They were involved. It's a charter school in Milwaukee. At that point, it was a good school. And I got involved with them and helped them develop, go from good to great, primarily recommending and helping fund, actually funded the mandatory summer school so that these kids wouldn't have the regression that they have in the summer. Mm-hmm. And that catapulted this organization into a new academic direction, and they really have become one of the outstanding schools in the country. Fast forward a few years, get another letter, look at it, set it aside. And when I'm going to Europe or China again, I took that letter home. And it was a letter from a lady in Waukesha, Wisconsin, Carol Garouz. And the thing that was impressed me about it was how articulate it was written. It's rare I see articulately written letters nowadays. Not many people can write very well. And that sort of caught my eye. I read it and I took it home and I gave it to my wife and said, Becky, why don't you talk to this lady and see what this is about? And the letter concerned a pastor in Chile and his wife and Concon, Chile, who were wanting to build a new school as a way to reach children and through the children reach the parents. I took off, and it turned out when Becky called this lady that this pastor, and this is about 6 weeks after I got the letter, this pastor was actually going to be there the week I was in Europe. So Becky ended up meeting with them, was impressed with them, and we talked about it when I got home. So we decided to go to Concon, Chile, and see what it's about. And that was the first of three trips.
Mm-hmm.
However, on the last trip, I became concerned about transparency and a sense of entitlement. We were going to fund approximately $300,000, about half the cost of the school. And I didn't feel comfortable. I wrote a letter with some of my concerns, and the response was not as it was not aligned with what I thought was appropriate. So we backed away from that organization and just felt, you know, we were ahead of God's time.
Mm-hmm.
MBI was had the funds that I was going to get for the school in Chile. I talked to the CEO, Steve Beam, and said, Steve, I'm not going to do this right now. You have the funds. What would you do with them? And a week later, he made a proposal to fund about, I think, 18 projects. I don't remember the exact number, mostly in Central America. They were in Belize, Honduras, Guatemala, and Nicaragua. And so I did. I said, those projects are interesting. Most of them related to schools, which is our passion, is education. My wife was a school teacher, and my dad, when he retired, went into education as well. And it's the door opener, so it's something that we've become very passionate about. Anyway, a year later, I called Steve and said, Steve, a month from now, I'm going to have time to go down to Central America, and I'd like to see what you spend the money on. There's a little bit of hesitation, and Steve said, okay. And I suspect a lot of the work was done in the 30 days before I came. But anyway, we went down, visited Belize, Nicaragua, and Honduras, flew commercially, which is difficult for me. I'm tall, have long legs, and small cars, traveled to three different countries, stayed in less than luxurious places, mostly mission homes. So it was a hard trip, but it was a spiritually uplifting trip. So, excuse me a second. So on the way home, probably one of the most important days of our lives, I was basically praying and said, God, you know, I was ahead of your time in Chile. I'm really excited by what I've seen in Central America and our potential impact the people in these countries. But I want you to give me a sign if you want me to be involved in Central America. And that was the first time I have asked for a sign from God, and I looked out my window, and it was absolutely clear day, except a giant cross made by clouds. So I said, well, God, I take that as a yes.
Oh, my goodness.
That started our mission work in Central America. That was in 2002, 2003 timeframe. And since that time, we have gone once or twice a year, with exception of the last several years due to COVID, and usually take a group of people with us. And we've expanded that to working with the former CEO of MBI, Linda Bois, and we now do trips to Puerto Rico as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that after the two hurricanes hit, and a lot of the schools down there were damaged. We usually work with the church and school. There's a few schools that are independent of any particular denomination, even though they may hold services there. Typically fund anywhere from 10 to 15 projects. And over the years, we have, I think, built or touched 300 schools and about 300,000 students in these schools. Our goal is to touch a million kids before we die. And we may have to live a long time to do that, but that's the audacious goal that we've set for ourselves.
You know, I don't think I've ever heard such a wonderful combination of a heart for education and also a heart for missions. And you've been able, by the grace of God and the way He's opened these doors up, to you, you've been able to combine those two passions, and they're really now one and the same. You're seeing through the work of the great work of Missionary Ventures, you're seeing the gospel and education all going in to this effort, and that's a wonderful thing.
You know, it is. It's in our way the only, in our view, our the most effective way to transform any society is through educating the children. And through children, particularly in Christian schools, reaching out to the parents as well. Where we have built a school for 1,500 kids. This is a huge program, a $50 million investment, where we build a really state-of-the-art K-4 through 12. Currently has 1,500 students, and we'll be doing an expansion over the next 3 years to 2,400 students or so. This school is really impacting children and minority children in Milwaukee, primarily Hispanic kids. We just had our first graduating class, and even though they came to us with an ACTs of about 12.5, 12.7, our first graduating class had over 50% accepted at Marquette University early, and 20 were awarded all in Milwaukee scholarship, which is a wonderful scholarship. It's where only 100 or so are given each year, mm-hmm. and we got 20% of those scholarships. So our kids are not only performing well academically, they're sponges academically, but a key part of what we have, four pillars in the school: faith, family, academics, and athletics / arts. And each of those is pursued in a serious way, and these kids are becoming impactful young people that are going to change Milwaukee in the long term. Mm-hmm. Our goal long term is to graduate 250 kids every year, and if we do that, Milwaukee will be changed in a fundamental way.
And what a wonderful way to change an area is to change it through loving on those kids and giving them what they need and being a part of that. That is just a wonderful story. Gus Ramirez is my guest. We're going to be back with Gus for another segment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're listening to The Shepherd. On the line with Gus Ramirez. Gus is a businessman, and he's traveled the world. He has business operations, as he's mentioned, overseas as well as in the United States. What has really drawn us to our talk with Gus today is his heart to be involved not only in his community and the communities of the United States, but his desire to see a difference in the lives of people overseas. We know that term broadly as missions work. You know, Gus and I were talking during the break about the verse in the book of Acts in chapter 1, where Jesus told his disciples right before the ascension that we, meaning all of us who are hearing that, we're to make disciples in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and the uttermost parts of the world. And I've just been intrigued by that four-step mission that the Lord gave us. Jerusalem, to me, always meant where we live, where our neighbors, our family members, people we shop with. Judea, our bigger region for us in Florida, that would be the state and maybe our city and the community. Samaria, to me, Gus, always indicated where I may not naturally want to go, because the Jews were not anxious to spend time in Samaria. And then, of course, the fourth one, the uttermost parts of the world. All four of those areas, God gave us a mandate to take the gospel into those areas. And that's what you're doing.
Yeah, let me, one of the efforts Becky and I have pursued over the years is to try to make the churches we went to missional churches. And there's a wonderful story relating to that, which I'd like to talk to you about. It's our church in Florida, Covenant Church in Naples. And, I would say about 10 years ago, we had a brunch scheduled with our pastor, Robert Peterson, the senior pastor at Covenant. And the church was in the process of building an expansion. I think it was about $12 million expansion. And I wanted to have a brunch to talk to him about the mission work we were doing. And we finally were able to schedule it. We had it. I invited him to a trip, which he accepted. And we just had a good conversation about mission work and what we were doing and why. After we finished that brunch, he looked at Becky and I and says, I can't tell you right now, but this may have been one of the most important days of my life. And I'll tell you sometime, but I can't tell you now. We finished our brunch. We shrugged our shoulders, had no clue what he was talking about. but one of the things we communicated to him was our concern about a church that was building an $11, $12 million expansion that was only doing $150,000, $200,000 worth of mission work. So he heard that. We went on on the mission trip a few months later. It was sort of eye-opening for him. He'd been on a lot of mission trips, but what he saw there and what he experienced were very impactful to him. He met a pastor who had had a church for over 20 years that only had about 30 people. And the pastor told a story, Pastor Tomas, about how God woke him up in the middle of the night and said, Pastor Tomas, you're not preaching to my people. And he woke up and talked to his wife, and they started having Sunday or Bible school over the weekends for young kids at his at their house. And then he called all the neighbors around him to come to his house for a brunch type of event. Mm-hmm. And he gave a confession. He said, I have sinned. I have not been presenting the gospel to you. I've been legalistic, and that's not what Jesus wants me to do. And I am confessing this sin to you and telling you that I'm going to change. We started working with Pastor Tomas a year or two after that. And he had a first, second grade school at that point in time, and we helped build it to through middle school. Eventually, he has built a high school and is serving hundreds of students throughout Managua in a very effective way at, I think, three or four different campuses. Well, Peterson heard some of that story, he met with a leader, Eric Lofgaard, in Nicaragua. And he was talking to him and said, Eric, I think what I can do for you is bring these brilliant businessmen and who have a lot of money and have a knowledge and really teach you how to more effectively change Nicaragua. And Eric, without missing a heartbeat, said, I tell you what, Pastor Peterson, you bring those people down and I will teach them how to do missions. And it was sort of a 2x4 and the side of Peterson's head, and he heard that message really strong and realized that that was indeed the appropriate response. Mm-hmm. And so we finished that trip. We got together with Pastor Peterson afterwards, and at the end of the trip, he had told us why he made the comment during our time together, previous time together. He said, Gus, Becky, I want you to know I was on the verge of accepting a call to a college university in Indiana where I could do a lot of writing and some preaching, but a lot of writing. And it was very attractive to me. But mm-hmm. after meeting with you, I decided that my challenge over the next 10 years of my preaching career was to convert Covenant to a missional church. When he said that, I said, well, I'll tell you what, Pastor, you're doing $150,000 in Central America. Becky and I are doing almost $1 million a year. I'll issue a challenge. I'll run that money through the church, provided within 3 years you're at least matching it. And he took up the challenge. And over the next 5 years, they went from supporting missions at $150,000 a year to $2.5 million, excluding what we were doing.
Oh, my goodness.
The The total was almost $3.5 million, which represented about 60% of the budget that they had for this church. And it completely changed the environment of the church. They're supporting 40, 50 missions around the world. These people come to us during church services and talk about their work, mostly overseas, but some within Naples area. And that sort of missional perspective has helped transform that church from a church that served old, wealthy people that most of them came down for just the winter, to one that's serving families as well as that previous cohort. So it's become a very large church. We've had another expansion and are going to a third expansion to expand the Sunday school because we didn't have any kids. And now we're just overloaded with children that need to be taught. Mm-hmm. So over a period of 5 years, there was a transformation of that church because the church leader decided that people were too comfortable. And they needed to get outside their sandbox and do something special, whatever it was, whether it was in Naples, where they came from up north, or internationally. And the transformation of that church has created, one of the most effective missional churches that I know in the country. So it's really been very gratifying to see how that can happen. And the work doesn't have to be overseas. In Milwaukee, we are working with a number of organizations. We help find an organization called Schools That Can. My daughter, who was a University of Virginia graduate, went to Stanford for a business school and education master's, eventually was brought back to work for Husco by my son, who was heading up one of our businesses, to work for him. We had a trip to a school that was one of the founding schools of Schools That Can. It was a national organization at that point in time. And we fell in love with their vision, and we helped create a strategy for the new organization. And the leaders of the founding schools in this organization in Milwaukee decided that Abby, my daughter, should be the leader. And so she led that organization for 8 years, and it helped transform schools, help schools go from good to great, help them expand by bringing in outside funding from the Walton Foundation and other organizations to fund expansions. And that just comes about through a passion for an organization that was doing some great work. And their impact in Milwaukee has been very substantial. And the message I like to give your listeners is get involved. And through being involved, you will develop a passion in something that can be transformational, and then be part of making it transformational. It doesn't mean we've been very successful as a business. Our financial resources are much greater than most of the people in the world. But it's not having financial resources as much as having the energy and commitment to helping organizations be successful. Mm-hmm. And so we have done that in Milwaukee. We are doing it overseas, not only in Central America, but several countries in South America, Singapore, the Philippines, and several other places in Africa that we work with. And over the years, all of a sudden, time goes by and you've touched 300,000 kids. And so I want to encourage your listeners to listen to the urgings that they may have in their heart that are being provided through the Holy Spirit, and find ways they can make the world a better place through spreading the gospel.
You know, one of the things that I love about your story, Gus, is that it is affecting people on both ends of the spectrum of where they live. And like you've just told us about the Milwaukee experience, and then the lives that are changed in that local church where the pastor suddenly gets a vision. I think most of us think that missions work is all about what's on the other side of, like, the goal of where we're going, whether it's Chile or Nicaragua or another nation. But the truth of it is, missions work blesses both sides of that giving spectrum. And I've found that on missions trips that I'm on, I come away, when I'm going to help and going to serve and going to share, I find that I feel like when I return, I've been the one that's been the blessed the most. I'm sure you found that to be the case too.
Absolutely. I can't emphasize how important that is. When we get back, and we now travel differently, we go on a private plane and we visit four countries in a week, and we work from 7 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night, and we're exhausted by the time we finish. Because we're vetting a lot of programs, but we're also introducing anywhere from 4 to 8 people to the mission work that's going on. And but when we get back, it's almost like an opiate. We look at each other and say, gosh, I can't wait to go back again.
Yes.
As hard as it is, you know, we are blessed. And let me tell you a story along those lines. You know, God in the Bible says he blesses what you give, and he gives more in return, much more than what you give. And in 08, 09, we had the Great Recession. We've had recessions before in our business, and things turn down usually 30%, and we know how to deal with those recessions. And usually we have one or two of our global operations going strong if our U.S. operation is weak. So we're able to deal with the up and downs of a volatile economic environment that impacts our business in a big way. 08-09, everything collapsed. Our sales went down by around 55%. We had never lost money, and we were losing $30,000 a calendar day. It started in October 08. I made my commitments for funding, two commitments, one, the missionaries in December, and then projects usually April, May timeframe. So we funded the missionaries, and then April came around. We had reduced our employment 30%, but didn't know if that was enough. We were losing all this money. Our banks were getting nervous, and Becky and I talked about what we do in terms of supporting missions. We had actually made a commitment to the business where the banks were concerned we were going to break a covenant, as were we. So we reinvested about $5 million in the business, which required at age, I think it was 63, a selling of all our marketable securities and putting a mortgage in a house, which we hadn't had a mortgage for 10 years, in order to fund this commitment. Our children participated as well, and they raised about 20% of that amount. But the point was, it was very uncomfortable for us financially. And we said, you know, maybe I think God will let us skip a year this year. But as we talked about it, we said, you know, we're just going to figure out how to do this. So we funded our typical amount, which I think was $600,000, $700,000 for projects. And we just expanded our loans out of the house, and we're able to fund that commitment to mission work. A year later, in March, the world turns around, driven by China's recovery. Our business just starts performing in a spectacular fashion, and we get a huge tax refund because of all the losses we had had in the previous 12 mm-hmm. months, which allowed us to not only fund our new commitment to missions, but to even get rid of the mortgage and loans that we had to take to help the business during this very difficult time. But the point is, God blesses that. You know, when that sacrifice that we made, which was very uncomfortable for us, probably the most uncomfortable investment in our lives, and we were concerned. We were concerned whether the business would survive. And we had to be in a position that if we had to invest more money in the business, that we would then put a mortgage in our Florida home and really get some funding from our parents if they could afford it, if it was necessary. It wasn't necessary. But the point is, we had to be in a position to save the business entity, because that was a source of our resources that allow us to do mission work and live. So it was a really great example of God blessing sacrifice, and really taught us that, you know, don't back away. Don't back away from risk. Don't back away from making commitments, because God blesses that work. Maybe not financially like he does in that particular way, but he blesses it. And we know we get more in return than what we put in. These mission families that we have supported and worked with for 20 years, almost 20 years, we help send their kids to college. They become part of our extended family. And they're not just people we work with in the mission field, but they have become part of our family, and you know, the love we have is part of what makes these mission trips so spiritually and emotionally gratifying. Are the relationships we build not only with the missionaries, but the organizations we work with down there.
I've enjoyed talking with you today, Gus, so much, and I thank you for the example that you are. And your wife, too, Becky, just please express to her our great appreciation for your heart for the Lord, for missions, for children, for education, and using the resources that God has blessed you with to step out in faith as you've done. And God continues to bless that effort. Thank you for being with us today, sir.
Enjoyed it very much, Mike, and God bless you, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir. Gus Ramirez here on Afternoons with Mike, and we'll be back in a moment. Don't go away. This is The Shepherd. Back in the studio, and with me right now, a guest from Seminole County. She is a commissioner in District 5. Andrea Herr, welcome to my program.
Thank you so much for having me today.
It is great to have you here and to learn about your background. And, you know, I've really got a passion that's been born in me from a good friend of mine named Dave Zanotti, who talks regularly about the need and what it's going to take for our country to get back on track again with regard to being the country that is a representative government. It's going to take people being willing to get involved with the system. It's easy to look, isn't this true? It's easy to look at the system that we have right now and say it's broken, and many areas of it is broken, but it's not going to get fixed until people like you, who have a heart and have conviction, jump in to say, I'm going to help fix it.
You're right. Well, and I look at the system and I think, for as many things that are broken, there's probably 3, 4, 5, 6 for each one that work.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't focus on that anymore in society, and we really need to. There was a time, and even in my life, in my generation, where we did take time to celebrate the successes and not dwell on the failures, and society has changed.
Yeah, we know that America has never been perfect. I mean, no place is perfect. We read that in the Bible. We're all,
right.
We've all sinned and fallen short of God's glory. But, you know, one thing that we have lost, and we've lost a great deal of it even recently, is just the general, I would call it respect for one another. Kind of like we could agree, we disagree, but we can disagree agreeably.
Yep.
And right now, the tensions in America, that's not seen just about everywhere.
Well, and it's fueled by the need to sell ad space, right? So there's a fairly significant industry behind the fueling of our fighting.
There's no question.
It's hard to stop, right? It's hard to not slow down when you see a car wreck on the side of the road, and that is human nature. And our human nature is being played against us, not only individually, but societally. A good reason, very foundationally, why I ran is to sort of change that dialogue. So
I
think we can disagree respectfully, but we can also agree respectfully. I'm not sure we even do that anymore.
I think you're right. I think it's
Let's
the craziest
start with the
thing.
Easy one.
Yeah, right. I think it's nuts right now what's going on with, you know, just the even the discourse. In the media is out of control. I'm a member of the media to some degree, but I'm not a member of that flow of the media. And I don't want to even be associated with the stuff that's there, because it is this pushing of a narrative. And it's like most of the media today, it's like they're getting their talking points from one solid place, one single place. And they all say the same phrases. They're all using the same utterances, descriptors. And that's not by accident.
It's not by accident. And it's not necessarily relegated to one side of the issue or the other. It's happening on both sides of the issues. And it's really unfortunate because it's not only teaching our children not to think for themselves, but it's teaching our adults not to think for themselves.
Yeah.
And so we're in a dangerous place in society. And I do think what it will take to change us, even if just one little bit, is people that can step out of their comfort zone and step in and lean in and attempt to lead from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were in business yourself. You, like we talked about, you've not always been a commissioner. You were in business. Tell us a little bit about that.
I've been a commissioner for less than a year now. The election was last November. I have never run for office before. I never aspired to run for office before. I can guarantee you that. And if you asked any of my friends or family whether or not I would or could ever run for office, I am exceptionally forthcoming and transparent. So most of the good educators would have said, don't do it, Andrea, don't mm-hmm. do it. And many did.
What kind of business were you in?
I am in the employee benefits business. So I'm in the insurance industry, and I've been in that business since 1987. My expertise is with large group employer-based plans, so providing health insurance for those that we employ. And I spend part of my time doing that for a list of clients, and I spend the other part of my time doing research on cost containment opportunities for the healthcare spend, which is a significant lift.
Mm-hmm.
I work for one of the largest privately held insurance agencies in the country, Hylent, based out of Toledo, Ohio. Family business, fourth generation, and very respectful of our desire to support the community. So I had their full support, and I still do that job today.
So you do that job full time.
I do.
And yet I know most of the commissioner positions, they're not full time, right?
They're not intended to be full-time. They could be full-time and yes. a half.
Yes.
But I will tell you that one of the things that I bring to the table is the notion that I'm in a governing role, not a managing role. And so I'm about building good policies, hiring good people, and letting them manage. And so I think that's the role that the citizens elect me to do. And if I do that well, the rest will follow.
Now, to what do you credit your basic understanding of representative government as you do, obviously? I mean, even that phrase that you just gave is not typically uttered. I've not heard that so well spoken.
I guess I would give credit to one of the best colleges in the state of Florida. It's not going to be the one you think it is. So go Hatter, Stetson University.
Okay.
Fantastic.
That's
foundational
great.
Education opportunity. And God bless my parents for allowing me to go there.
Mm-hmm. Were there any particular courses that really just set your heart on fire with this notion of I can be involved?
There really weren't. The courses that set my heart on fire have driven my commercial production, meaning my job and my career.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not. My husband is a great history buff. My friends are great history buffs, and I've certainly have a tremendous amount of respect, but I won't say that. What Stetson did, though, was give you the foundation to think for yourself, to ask good questions, to speak less than you listen, and to make sure that you're continually learning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what gave me the opportunity to do what I'm doing now.
When you look around at Central Florida, and you were making maybe the early part of making a decision to run, what were the things that, let's say, bothered you the most?
I think the things that bothered me the most in our community that were people were really running for the wrong reason. They were running because they needed a job. They were running because they had a vendetta. They were running because they had a political platform that they wanted to force upon a community that may not be ready for that political platform. They weren't running because there are citizens in our community that deserve to live the American dream the same way we got to live the American dream, and that they could become a facilitator of that dream.
Mm-hmm.
So the ability to serve and the desire to serve should be about service. It shouldn't be about oneself. And the more I watched what was happening, the more disturbed I got.
Mm-hmm.
And someone asked me, would you consider doing it? And I said no. And I said no for a good long while. And then I had somebody very close to me who said, you really are the right one. You've let this play out as long as you can. I think you need to seriously consider it. And I did. And here we are.
Wow.
Probably the worst campaigner in the universe. I will say that. I am an introvert by nature. Most people would not believe that because I do a lot of public speaking, but that's a learned skill and a forced situation.
You know, public speaking is one of the things that's called the greatest fears in people's lives.
Right.
It's in the top list, maybe number one.
Maybe number one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe number one. Public speaking doesn't bother me. I don't like the room full of strangers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can I do it? Yes. Did I do it? Yes. Do
you
I
had
love
to
it?
Do it?
No,
yeah.
You had to do it. Yeah. And then you do quickly learn once you put yourself out there that it's really not a room full of strangers, because at some point in our community, we all know somebody mutual, right? Even in Central Florida, is pretty small in the grand scheme of things. So if you think about it from a different perspective, so a tremendous learning opportunity, the ability to serve, the ability to empower the 1,400 employees or so that we have to do the best they can do, to do the right thing first, to do the right thing second, to do the right thing last, is a gift.
Now, I have to ask this question, because campaigning for public office in itself is a bit of an art. I mean, there has to be a lot that I would not even know anything about. What about the campaign when you began maybe was the most shocking reality to you?
I don't know that I had a shocking reality. I would tell you that I'll flip the question a little bit. I think the thing that was not shocking and the most important is you build a plan, you work the plan, and you stick to the plan. If you spend enough time building the plan, you run it like a business. Most of the competition does not do that. Most candidates do not do that. Some of the best do. It is interesting. Similar to planning a wedding, I'll use this analogy. The planning of a wedding often tests the ability of the couple to stay together.
That's true.
I should probably also own the fact that we've been married for 35 years, but my husband and I eloped. So we maybe didn't take up on that opportunity. But campaigning also gives you a good insight into the ability of someone to manage themselves in office. And I did see sort of the sleight of hand, the misfiled report, the oops, I didn't mean to put that on there. Oops, I didn't realize that was a rule. And that's really unfortunate. And the citizen should pay attention to those slips along the way, because guaranteed there will be bigger slips later on.
Mm-hmm. Well, as a person now that is on the board, what are your thoughts? Do you recommend this for other people like yourself?
I do. I particularly recommend it for successful business people, because what we bring to that board is invaluable. I think when you have a good mix of elected officials that bring the business perspective, maybe the social services perspective, the education perspective, small business, large business, then you end up with a collaborative board, which we do have, you'll end up with better solutions as a result of that collaboration and the different perspectives coming to the table. So I do recommend this for business leaders with a big heart and a tough outer skin and a strong gut.
Yeah, it takes it. Were there nights that you go home and like, why did I ever do this?
Yes.
Anything that you can share about that?
Well, my first meeting started at 9:30 in the morning and lasted until 11:30 at night.
Yeah, for a part-time thing, that's
fairly controversial issue that was on the deck. And, you know, we got through it. Folks were very upset. And I did drive home that night a bit tired, a bit hungry, and a bit cranky, thinking, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
I think it's a country song. Yeah. What was I thinking?
Well, if it's not, it needs to be, right?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you so much for what you're doing. Thank you for making a difference and really getting in there. And I think that the message of what you've done is something that's important, because people need to get involved. People who can get involved, and like you, you would have thought you don't have time for it, or maybe it wasn't even the highest of priorities.
Right.
But you listened And you said yes. So thank you for doing that, Andrea.
Well, and I'm going to say thank you back to you for being a positive voice in the media.
Well, thank you.
We need you more than ever as well.
Well, I appreciate that. I'd like to be able to speak some sense into a lot of my cohorts. They need it. They need it. Andrea Herr, my guest for this segment. Thank you, Andrea. And friends, that's about all of our time for today. We'll catch you next time on Afternoons with Mike.
Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by U.S. Christian Chamber, National Conference, and Expo.